And it when you're trying to be inclusive, it's hard to invite people in and say, we want you to be a part of this, and then they can't afford it. And so, especially in Mississippi, which lags behind much of the country economically, this has been really important to helping us serve our whole community.
Welcome to Common Roots, an Infra podcast.
And I'm your host, Haley Craig.
Independent natural food retailers are as diverse and unique as the communities they serve. From urban to rural, East Coast to West Coast, small to large, there's one thing that these stores have in common: a deep commitment to providing healthy foods to their communities. In celebration of Infra's 20th anniversary, we're handing over the mic to 20 Infra members to share their challenges and triumphs in navigating the world of natural food retail. Are our common roots really so common? Let's find out. Today, we are joined by John Martin and Kate Bishop from Chicory Market, and this is their story. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Kate and John, here on Common Roots. Could you please just start off by introducing yourselves and telling us a little bit about your store?
My name is Kate Bishop, and John and I are the co-owners and operators of Chicory Market in Oxford, Mississippi. We are a community grocery. We are focused on growing our local food economy and being a place where people of all income levels can access fresh and healthy food. We have been in business a little over 8 years. In that time, have gone through one relocation and expansion, and we're continuing to grow.
The other thing to know about us, and this is John Martin, Kate's partner in business and life. We do not come from the food world. Originally, Kate was in education and I was in the arts. And so in 2016, we kind of made a leap from being volunteers in food and kind of involved in farmers markets and CSAs, and started this business. So we bring kind of like a different background to the market.
We had been living, I'm originally from Oxford, so it's my hometown, but hadn't lived here since I was little. And John and I have been living in the Northeast, and we had been in New York for about a decade, working in education and in the arts. And we had a couple of small children, and we were really looking to move someplace a little quieter, and to try to figure out a way to be in a smaller community where we would feel like we could contribute. And so the opportunity arose somewhat randomly for us to take over this community farm stand that had been operating in Oxford for, you know, almost 30 years and was shutting down. And so John and I, for really reasons that are kind of mystical and magical, decided that we wanted to leave the city and move to Mississippi to do that.
We also, Kate's from here. And we lived in the Mississippi Delta for a while, for about 4 years, which is a really special place. It is an agricultural area. It's known as one of the most fertile places on earth. So anything will grow there. It's very jungly. But when we were there, it was the early 2000s, and it was kind of the early days of the country reckoning with what was then called the obesity epidemic. And even though we were living in this really fertile place, everything that was grown is like corn, cotton, and soybeans. So it's like commodity crops, and there's nothing you could eat. So like people would grow backyard gardens, but you had this kind of paradox of being in this agricultural space, but also a space that was kind of like suffering from this health crisis. So when Kate in her early years grew up in a family that was very concerned about health, and we became more attuned to food policy and food issues when we were living in the Delta.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like there's such this interesting dichotomy with natural food stores in the South. Like, I recently just had a conversation with Adam at Turnip Truck, which is in Nashville. And we talked a lot about that as well, and how the landscape is just very different compared to, you know, other areas of the country. So would you mind talking just a little bit more about like what the demographic of shoppers at your store looks like? Because you're in North Mississippi, right?
Yeah.
You got that right. Yeah, we're about an hour south of Memphis, Tennessee. Oxford is an interesting community. It's still, you know, famously it's the home of William Faulkner. So it's got a strong like literary and cultural tradition, music with the blues. It's also still a small town. So it's the home of the University of Mississippi, commonly known as Ole Miss. Without the university, it's like 20,000 people, a little above 20,000 people. So that Kate mentioned moving to a smaller community and being able to plug in, and that's a big part of it. But it also, because the university has kind of a cultural energy, so it attracts a lot of people from different backgrounds. So I don't know, you want to talk about some of our customers?
We have, especially since moving to our new location, which is, you know, in the center of town, we have attracted a lot of students. So we, have a really high percentage of college kids who are shopping here, and like university staff, who a lot of whom are from other places or have lived in bigger cities or and are kind of drawn to some of the foods that we offer. But because we started as a community farm stand and really have focused from the very beginning on like fresh local produce, a huge part of our mission and a lot of our customer base is people coming in for like local food, for local produce in particular. And so when you walk into our store, the first thing you see is our produce section, and we kind of force you, by the way we design the store, we force you to kind of to be in it, right, in the produce section with all of the smells and the colors. And so that's a lot of who comes into our store are people who are coming in for the local greens, muscadines or whatever it is. And so that's a part of our market too.
Yeah. It's a diverse mix. I mean, it's country folk and, you know, academics and students and alumni and just kind of everyday people.
For sure. Awesome. And what also does the landscape look like in terms of corporate competition, you know, big box stores in your area? How do you kind of deal with that? And also, I would be curious to know what the broader natural food landscape looks like in your area. Is there other natural food stores? Is there competition in that? What does that makeup kind of look like?
There are no other natural food stores in town. There's a Kroger and a Walmart, and then there's another local grocery store that doesn't specialize in natural food
or a super
or even local food. And so a lot of our customers are shopping a little bit at those supermarkets and then coming to us for kind of additional things or to round out their grocery list. Customers who are otherwise, they're ordering something online or driving to Memphis to go to, you know, Trader Joe's and Whole Foods and things like that. And so we've really benefited from being demographically on paper. We're a small enough town that Trader Joe's has not yet been interested in opening a location here, you know, and so because on paper we look a lot smaller than we do because the students aren't always included in the census data and the kind of second homeowners who are here for football games and university reasons are not always included in the census data.
But Haley, don't tell anyone about that.
We don't want them to know that
it's a secret.
Yeah, there are like demographically, I guess we, one thing we didn't talk about earlier is there's a really strong out-of-state population, but I was going to say the football culture here is real, and there is a huge percentage of folks who are coming in for football games and who don't live here the rest of the year but come for sports and have a house here, condos.
They have means that, you know, your average Mississippian might not have because they're coming from Dallas and, you know, Atlanta and Nashville. And so we do benefit from some of that influx. The other demographic we get more and more of are student athletes from the university. So we'll get football players and basketball players and women's soccer player, you know, and different people who are looking to eat healthy. Yeah, and then because it's a small town, as Kate mentioned, and it's a university, I mean, we do live in kind of a bubble, which allows a place like this to thrive, we feel. And we've seen that in other places, like, you know, wherever we go, we try to visit local markets and community groceries and natural food stores. And like we've been out to West Texas. Some of Kate's family's from Texas, and every little town there seemed to have like a natural food store, you know. So, and some of them are university towns. Some of them are just, you know, kind of towns that people visit seasonally. And so it's kind of interesting. Like we don't exactly know what it would take to make a natural food store work where there's corporate natural food chains. A couple of years ago, we relocated and expanded to a larger space in the center of town. And part of the reason for doing that is we wanted to position ourselves in case, you know, something like that moved into town and Oxford got big enough that we could distinguish ourselves and compete possibly with a corporate presence.
Yeah. You know, when I'm talking to store owners in California, it's a very different conversation where their whole mission and, you know, what they're doing is how we differentiate ourselves, how we compete with Sprouts next door, Trader Joe's to the other side, and then 40 other natural food stores in the community. It's different, right? But it's all facing different challenges. And also, just to back it up a little bit, because you do have such a cool story of, you know, starting out as the farm stand and moving into a full service grocery store. So could you just share a little bit more about kind of that journey and that story of kind of what prompted that transition and how that journey was?
I will say that, like, coming from a big city and moving here personally, you know, I grew up in a family that really focused on eating healthy and kind of natural foods, and you know, got pretty deep into that as an adult myself. And when we moved to town, and I had to go to the supermarket, you know, it was before we had opened the store. We had about 6 weeks where we were just trying to, like, kind of build out the farm stand to reopen, and so I had to go to the supermarket, and I was like wandering down the aisle. And just, I started crying that I was like, we moved here and I can't find the food that I want. And like, how are we going to live here? I can't, you know, it was just such a, like, an emotional experience. And I kind of doubted how we were going to be able to feed our family in the way that we needed to. And so that, you know, drove home to me that, like, if we didn't do this, if we didn't start figuring out carrying groceries and kind of expanding our footprint, then, like, personally, we wouldn't be able to find the food that we wanted. And obviously there are, you know, tons of people in town who are having the same experience, who are driving to Memphis to get food every week or two because they want an organic option that the supermarkets didn't carry. And so that was really personally motivated in a lot of ways.
So one of the reasons we decided to do this is because there was a place that already existed, which is, you know, I think we both can attribute a lot of our success to that. We were plugging into something that was already there. So this place started as, it was called Mr. Hollowell's Farm Stand, and it started, I think, around 1990. And it was run by an old farmer named Mr. Hollowell, who would sit, who would kind of aggregate some crops from his old friends, but he would also bring in produce from distributors. And the story we hear is he would sit behind the counter and chew tobacco and, you know, kind of make up prices depending on who you were, as, you know, approaching him, or how well he knew you. So it's this very kind of eccentric local food place before there was actually really a local food movement. I mean, this is kind of going back to the days where there was like a farmer's market on the square in Oxford. And he ran it for about, I think, 20 years until the early 2000s. And then a friend of ours named Liz Stagg and her husband took it over. She's from Louisiana originally. And they, I think, did some improvements. They still sold, you know, like dented can items. And people used to call it the dent store because you could get cheap canned goods. And it was really, you know, it was on the outskirts of town. It was a gravel parking lot. They did some different things. Like, they brought in fresh meat and made hummus and added some grocery items. But when we took over from Liz, she had closed because her husband had passed away. And she was kind of in this moment of grief and just wanted to move on. And so when we bought the business, the roof was caving in on one side. It was completely shuttered. It was, you know, there were receipts all over the floor. So we cleaned out most of what was in there, put a fresh coat of paint on, still had a concrete floor, and we added, you know, we brought shelves in. We had an idea of what we wanted to do and what Oxford was looking for. And Kate mentioned not being able to find fresh food or food that, you know, you might want, you might be interested in if you wanted to eat healthier. And there was nowhere to get prepared foods in town and take home other than like fried chicken from the gas station or something like that. So we added a kitchen. And then we were very fortunate to get to know Laurie Stierett, who worked at the old store when Liz had it, when it was called the Farmer's Market. And she is from Louisiana, and she comes from a family of Louisiana cooks. And so she brought a lot of recipes, gumbo, jambalaya, red beans and rice. And then we also were doing, you know, chicken salad. We're doing, you know, kind of like take and bake lasagna and things like that at that point. And that selfishly was what we wanted, because we could take something home and eat it and not have to worry about cooking. And I think what we discovered was that was what a lot of people wanted here.
Okay, great. But another thing I would love to know from you is, because you do come from not a traditional, you know, grocery background, which I think is so interesting, because again, with these conversations, it's been like so many different stories of either people, like the story of like their family passing down the store through generations, or people that are like came out of complete left field and just wanted to do this thing. So I would love to know, you know, how you think your background has kind of benefited you in this journey and has kind of maybe helped bring this different perspective to owning your store, and just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think one thing is that, like, I am a teacher and I came up through Teach for America, and I very much like was motivated to be a teacher because I felt like everyone needed access to a good education. And it was like I was motivated by that as a civil rights issue. And John has been in the arts and worked for nonprofits and has been very also motivated by the capacity for everyone to be able to benefit from art, you know, the arts. Our work has always been in kind of nonprofits and education. And so when we were approaching this, it was our primary motivation was not like, let's go and start a business and, you know, grow the business and make a bunch of money. It was like, how are we going to do this in a way that is mission driven and that makes us feel excited about coming to work, and what's going to like motivate us to do this? And it was about this mission to really contribute to the local food economy and to really be a place where people from all across the community could have fresh food at a price point that they could afford. And so that's what drives us. And that drives us every day to get out of bed and to keep working. And I think that is a result of our kind of upbringing and our work experience outside of grocery and retail. And then specifically, like, I am a teacher, and I was an educational consultant for a bunch of years, and was, you know, coaching teachers and growing them as in their capacity to be better for their students. And so my work in the market is primarily around like staff development and organizing people and supporting managers to do their jobs. And I think that's been helpful to have that kind of educational experience. First of all, to really believe that like everyone has the capacity to learn and to do better. And, you know, it's our job to teach them how to do better. And so that's been, I think, helpful.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. Well, I feel like that's what makes is like the mission and the reason you even get started, like you already said, Kate, is never monetary. Because even if that is your goal, it's probably going to take you a while to get there. So I don't know. It just makes like stories like yours feel even more special because it is coming from a place of wanting to feed your community and not to just milk communities for money, you know?
Yeah, if we'd known what we were getting to,
we wouldn't have done it.
No, I mean, there's something to be said for not being an expert at something, right? And not having that like totally best practice knowledge going in.
We didn't have any.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't know. But we were
because you're willing to experiment with things that you might not be willing to experiment with if you had, you know, the handbook.
Yeah. Well, and thank God you did. But I totally understand that. And the amount of work and labor that you've put into it, I'm sure, is insane. Okay, great. And just to touch on Infra, of course, a little bit, joined Infra in 2023, I believe. So I would just love to know what kind of initially inspired you to become a member of Infra, how you found us, that whole story.
When John and I, before we opened the market, we went to San Francisco and we were touring Buyrite, and they were so generous with their time and really took us on tours of the store and their facilities and sat down with us for a couple of hours just telling us a little bit of everything about what we needed to know. And we didn't know anything. And so we've been able to maintain a little bit of a relationship with them over the years. And at some point, Calvin told us about Infra, and we had been, figuring everything out from scratch. Like, what are the stocking systems we use, and how do you do the POS, and how, like, we felt really kind of lonely, and like we were trying to make everything up from nothing. And so the idea that there was an organization that existed where people were doing stuff and sharing what they were doing and that these things already existed was like such an amazing experience, right? It's like someone just like pulled the curtain back and you saw this whole world that that you didn't have access to or didn't know was there. And so that's really like the community and the professional development that Infra provides has been, I think, the most valuable thing for us, just to be able to have that support from the Infra team and other groceries has been fantastic.
The other thing it's really helped us with is the accessibility part of our mission. So the buying cooperative really allowed us to lower our prices, participate in the Everyday Low Price program with the Cadia brand, And that really helped our mission overall, because without that, we were having to charge so much more and we weren't getting, you know, competitive costs on our food. And when you're trying to be inclusive, it's hard to invite people in and say, we want you to be a part of this, and then they can't afford it. And so, especially in Mississippi, which lags behind much of the country economically, this has been really important to helping us serve our whole community.
Lovely. And I would also love to know, because a big part of Chicory Market is you work with a lot of local farmers, local food makers. So I would just love to know how you kind of built and maintained those relationships and what that kind of, you know, vetting process looks like, what you decide to put in the store, all that.
I guess this is where my background
comes
in handy. So when I was working for the arts, I spent about a decade in development work and fundraising. So and relationship building was part of my professional background. So that helped out a lot. I mean, when we moved, the local farmers markets were really helpful in finding farms. And, you know, we would visit, we have two here in Oxford. So it's a small town, but we have two farmers markets, one on Tuesday and one on Saturday. So we would go and we got to know some of the farmers. There were some relationships we inherited with the old store. And Liz, who ran that, was really helpful in passing those relationships along. We went up to Memphis, which has a great farmers market. We met some folks up there. And it was really, after a while, it was just word of mouth. And the more the business grew, you know, the more people started to come to us and bring in, you know, their ideas and their food. And it's really kind of grown from there.
We really focus on local food first. And so if someone is making it locally and they can make it in a way that is like compliant and safe, then we will, you know, give it a go. But one, real estate in Oxford is pretty expensive compared to other parts of Mississippi. And so it's hard to find commercial kitchen space for some of our smaller vendors. So that's a barrier. There's a ton of cottage food industry people selling food at the farmers market. And that's great. Like lots of people are able to run, you know, kind of small businesses that at least help support their families by making, you know, brownies or soap at the farmers market. But when it comes to being able to scale up and get a manufacturer's license, they need a commercial kitchen space. And that's hard for people to find around here. There's not anything that exists. And so that's always kind of something in the back of our mind that we would love to be able to organize or provide for people if we can figure that out. But yeah, I think we are starting to grow into a role where we're trying to really to help these the people who are running cottage food businesses to grow their businesses to meet demand, which is always, it's a, you know, they say it's a good problem to have, but it's still a problem that if you are going to sell at our store, we need the shelf to stay full during the week. And so it's hard to go from just someone who's baking for their farmer's market and selling once a week to like being able to have the shelf full every day, full of their brownies or whatever it is. And so that's something that we wrestle with.
Yeah. And there are some success stories. Like there's a guy who makes juice and juice shots. He goes under the brand Nature's Help Haven. And he initially rented space in our kitchen in the old market and got his manufacturer's license. And now he has his own kitchen. And, you know, his business is growing and growing. He's in more than like a dozen stores from here to Memphis. And we're selling a lot more of his stuff. And so, you know, there's a lot of people who have made the leap there's a baker named Mrs. Hippies who specializes in vegan baked goods. And she also got her manufacturer's license working with us. So, but kitchen space, even in our market now, is really hard to come by because our kitchen is so busy at this point. So,
yeah, I can only imagine. But so impressive and just amazing that you're, yeah, helping to support little guys supporting the little guys. I love to hear it.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Amazing.
And that's what makes the shopping experience maybe different, probably in a lot of infra stores, because it's not just a natural food store, or, you know, you're not just coming for supplements. You're finding very unique products that are just made in this county or, you know, in the South. I mean, we also prioritize regional products. So we have guacamole and salsa and chips from Memphis. And then, you know, we have bigger brands like Spice Walla coming from Asheville, North Carolina. And so we try to find those special brands that are within, you know, mostly within a day's journey.
For sure. Amazing. Great. Well, I just have a few more questions for you both. First, I would love to know from both of you, what is something that you love about the natural foods industry as a whole?
My dad's like favorite saying growing up was, you are what you eat. And in those days in North Mississippi, that was that meant that we shopped from the like health food aisle at Kroger, and it was really depressing, you know, like the food was packaged in really generic packaging, and it didn't inspire, you know, culinary experimentation or delights at all. It was pretty sterile feeling. And now the industry has grown so much that, like, I think you can be a natural food consumer in a natural food store without even knowing that that's what you're doing, because there are so many different brands making food with integrity, and they're doing it in ways that are just like so exciting and delicious and beautiful. And so
And I would say the people. I think then natural foods, like, there's real shared values between the people who work at the market and the people who shop there. And there's a lot of common ground that, you know, makes for an overwhelmingly positive experience on both sides of the counter. And we get really inspired by customers who bring new ideas, and a lot of our inventory is built with customer requests. And also, you know, we love helping customers who come to us and say, I'm trying to eat better, or I'm trying to eat less meat, and, you know, do you have any recommendations? And then they come back and they are really happy because we're helping them make some changes that makes them, improves their lives.
Yeah, I love that. All about the relationships. All right, great. And very last question for you both, which might be a hard one because I'm sure you have many, but I would love to know, what is one of the most valuable lessons that you have learned in your time running your business?
I would say that really articulating, being able to articulate our mission and articulate core values that we ask everyone on our team to operate by is has been transformative, in that, like, whenever a problem comes up, as they do every minute of every day, like, really being able to rely on our mission and core values to determine how we're going to make decisions has been is critical. And so it seemed like when we were like trying to hone in on what our core values were or articulate a mission statement, it seems like that's like lofty work that that you could just kind of like keep on your computer or put on your bulletin board. But really thinking about those as your guiding principles every single day has made some really hard decisions a lot clearer.
Yeah, when we started out, it was K and me and two other people. And we really relied on our trust of some really special people. And so now we have 81 employees, I think. And they're all great people. And but in order to kind of keep that spirit of trust, these structures that Kate's talking about, the core values, the organizational structure is so key, because everyone has to know like what the expectations are and what their roles are. And if they know that, then the people you trust can really thrive. Yeah. And then the thing that I'm currently learning more about is how to use data in growing the business. And I'd like to give a shout out to the folks at Rainbow Blossom. James Folliwell there is, I think, their CFO, and he has been very helpful in mentoring me to introduce data. You know, the bigger we get, the less we can do by hand or by sight. And so that's been really helpful in guiding the team on making decisions about purchasing and making food in the kitchen, making prepared foods and stocking and staffing. And so that's been really, continues to be really helpful. And we still have a long way to go with it, but we're on the right track.
Thank you for tuning in to Common Roots. This episode has been made possible thanks to the hard work of Infra staff and Infra member contributors. To learn more about the retailers we serve, visit our retailer directory at naturalfoodretailers.com/retailer-directory.